What's up, everybody? It's me, your host of the Podcast for the Universe. This is the Energy is Love podcast. Obviously, that's self-explanatory, hence you're listening to it because you're listening to it. I always go through everything about the show and where you can find us, and hopefully you guys know of all of those places by now because you are tuning in and subscribing and downloading these episodes. So thank you very much. One of the coolest things with the podcast is we have listeners all over the world and all over the globe, and it's always fun to see where people are tuning in and listening to the podcast. So thank you, everybody out there, wherever you're from, Australia, Canada, Pakistan, the UK, Colombia, South America, everywhere. It's just amazing to me that everybody out there gets the opportunity to listen to this podcast. So thank you. Thank you for sharing the show, and thank you for subscribing, and please do more of that so that we can help it expand and grow. EnergyLovePodcast.com. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, As Above, So Below. They are a wonderful little metaphysical shop located in Roy, Utah. Go online to Facebook and you can find their Facebook page where they have tons of information about all the events that they host at the shop, as well as all of the sells and deals. At As Above, So Below, you can find plenty of metaphysical, spiritual, practical things for your experience in this life. Things to aid you, things to help you, not just crystals and smudging and tarot cards and jewelry and incense, and the list just goes on and on and on. But if you go online and check them out, you can also go to our website, click on the sponsors link, you can follow them on Facebook. Coming up on December 17th at As Above, So Below, they're going to have a spellcraft workshop. It's only $20. It's a wonderful opportunity to dive into some of the deeper things in regards to spirituality and how to work with them. So go check them out. Pop in and say hello. Make sure you let them know that you heard about them on the podcast. Show them some love. On this episode of the podcast, I sat down once again with Aaron Stein. You guys heard Aaron on a much earlier episode of the podcast. He's one of those guys that I loved getting to talk to and chat with. Aaron and I always have interesting conversations. So he came back out and sat down for the podcast. It was once again a wonderful experience. As always, Aaron is incredibly in tune and intelligent and has thought-provoking viewpoints and ideas. And so this was a wonderful episode. Aaron is part of the InBody Yoga Academy, which is located here in Salt Lake City. It's a certification program for yoga instructors, and we talk about it quite a bit during this episode. So if you guys are into yoga, Aaron's a yogi, you can go find him on Facebook at the InBody Yoga Academy. You can also follow and find Aaron at shiftcourses.com. That's his website for everything that he does. He's got some information there, some courses, contact information, obviously. You can go on there and get your free ebook, Soul Force, a Manifesto. It's a brief history of the path of truth and love and what holds us back. So go check him out. Thank you, Aaron, for sitting down again for the podcast. Wonderful episode. Now you guys get to sit back and relax and tune in. Here we go.
You're listening to the Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is the Love podcast.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is Love podcast.
The podcast for the universe.
The Energy is Love podcast.
So, Aaron, here we are again.
Hi, Craig.
I'm good. How are you? You didn't ask me how I was, but I'm good.
Well, how are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great.
So, what have you been up to lately?
A lot.
Excellent. I'm excited to hear about it.
So lately I've been really working on our yoga therapy program, and that's the biggest endeavor. We're trying to get accredited as a college, and there's only about 10 or 11 colleges in the US that are accredited for yoga therapy.
So what does it take to do that? I'm imagining
it takes probably quite the process. Over 1,000 hours of yoga training. So it's definitely the upper level.
Yeah.
It's kind of the equivalent of a master's degree in yoga. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
You can get a master's degree in yoga, but that'll cost you about $50,000. And there's only one university in the world who offers it, to my knowledge.
So when you say you're trying to get it accredited as a college, what would that, first off, what is it so that people know they can go find it?
Okay. It's InBody Academy, and the yoga therapy program is called Ayla Yoga Therapy. So you go to InBodyAcademy.com or AylaYogaAcademy.com if you are interested. And it's intended for teachers. People are already yoga teachers. You need that 200-hour certification. And if you ask around, anyone who does yoga, pretty much half the people have their teaching certificate.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's really cool. But most people want to go further. And a lot of people don't want to teach in studios. And I believe, at least from my experience with people, that more and more people want to go deeper into the yogas, into the practice, and just using it as a healing modality, which is what it was always intended for. A way to heal and transform.
Yeah. Right.
Rather than just to get a really good workout and super rock hard abs.
Yeah, which, rather than to look good in yoga pants.
Yeah.
Is it here in Salt Lake City? It is, right?
Right, right. And we've been around for 10 years. So we're definitely the most experienced program around, at least the most experienced teachers. And there's lots of wonderful programs. And we fill a unique niche, I would say, in that. And we don't just focus on the physical practice, even though we bring what I would consider some of the best teachers from around the world in to work on that level, because that's where it starts, is in the body. But we also go a lot deeper and get into the meditation practices and the more transformational practices. And that's what I'm really excited about. That's what I tend to focus on.
The deeper spiritual stuff behind it.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the good stuff.
I think so. And, even 10 years ago, people really weren't interested in that. But more and more people are waking up.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're right. I think more and more people are waking up. I want to get your take on something, because I was going to go back and listen to the episode that we did. And because I always hate, I don't want to ask you the same questions. I don't want to rehash the same information. But then again, it doesn't really matter if we touch on other topics and things like that that we've already discussed. But I want to get your take on, because I think we did talk a little bit about the crazy state of the political atmosphere in the United States and in the country and the world as a whole. But now that we're past the election and we kind of have an idea of where we're going to be headed, even though who knows where the hell we're headed, I want to get your take on it. What do you think?
Yeah, I was actually just listening to that interview, and it was pretty spot on. We called it, unfortunately, pretty correctly. And so I always knew that most likely it would be Trump. And it's not because I'm psychic, it's just because you can look at the patterns of how things are going and what level of awareness most of humanity is on. And most people do live in the level of fear and uncertainty and survival. And so, a strong kind of alpha male who's able to exist outside of those levels, those chakras, especially in the third chakra of giant sense of self, third chakra is all about the sense of self, and Trump definitely has a strong sense of self.
Yeah.
And interestingly, that chakra is gold colored, and he's very golden. Everything around him is gold. And so people look at that and they're like, they want that. They want that sense of certainty. They want that sense of self, and they don't really care what it looks like. They just know that they don't have it. And so that's a little bit what we talked about, is that people will just really want to feel safe. And so that's what's been happening, and people don't feel safe in the world. And that's the bad news, is that we tend to select leaders, based on those lower levels of awareness. But the good news is that at least we're aware of that now. And so even if terrible, terrible things happen, which hopefully they won't, at least that's out in the open, because it's always been there. It's been there since the dawn of humanity.
Yeah. I don't think terrible things are going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think much will really change.
Yeah, I don't either. All of our kids had like ginormous meltdowns. They woke up the morning after the election and they were so frustrated and angry and pissed off. And I'm like, nothing's going to really change for you guys. Like your life day to day, everything that you do, especially as a teenager,
right?
Nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
I think for me personally, I think that was part of the reason why he ended up winning and getting elected. Or at least winning the nomination, but the
the Electoral College.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't win the popular vote, so there's still hope. Thank you, America. But he did win the Electoral College.
I think people just want change.
Exactly.
And I don't, you know, I think that they look at the spectrum of everything that's taking place in politics as in general, and I think people really see it for what it is, and they simply just want change. Mm-hmm. And whether it's good or bad change, and obviously he is change, whether or not he ends up being good or bad, we'll see. But I think for me personally, I think that's what happened. That's why it seemed like so many people came out and voted for him.
Right.
Simply because they wanted change.
I agree. I agree. And that's why the underdog Obama got elected the first time. People didn't want the same thing. They didn't want more Hillary. They just wanted change. That was his campaign.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a good thing. People want change. You can embrace that change. And that's the nature of reality. And we tend to suffer when we don't want change.
So besides working on the getting the college or getting the yoga accredited and everything like that, what else has been going on for you the last few months?
That's pretty much it, to be honest.
It's taking up a lot of time.
Yeah, taking up a lot of time, working with a lot of people. But it's fun. It's good work. You know, even if you don't get a lot of sleep and you work 15 hours a day, it's totally worth it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the yoga path, it never gets any easier. It probably gets harder, but it feels easier because you get more skilled at how you can deal with all the stressors, in theory. Some days are better than others. But you see the results. You see the results of the hard work and what can really happen when people come together and they create this, they have this passion for really changing the world and really transforming themselves. And that's where the real magic comes into play.
See, I think about that because so many people that we've had on the podcast before and people that I've talked to, like that's the driving force behind what they're doing in life, regardless of how they kind of package it in a sense, whatever the case may be. They really just are trying to do what they can to change the world in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And I think it's noble and I think it's a wonderful thing. And I mean, that's part of the reason why we do the podcast, because we like the idea, you know, I like the idea that I'm, you know, changing people's opinions or minds or even in the smallest sense. But I'm kind of to the point, like I'm getting to this point, Aaron, where it's like, we have to do more. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that when we take part in little things in our own little corners of the world and everything like that, I think it's beautiful and I think it's wonderful and I think it's benefiting and I think it's helpful. Mm-hmm. But I think that there has to be more that needs to happen. Now, whether that's more people kind of doing their own thing in their own little corners of the world and everything eventually helps raise the vibration, or if there's some bigger, grander thing of people coming together. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's this yogic idea of soul force. And I wrote a little ebook. You can go to the website and get it. But it's this idea of the path of yoga, that's not just the heart, it's the mind and the heart. And Gandhi and Martin Luther King, they talked about soul force, this really powerful aspect that we all have in us. And it's not just being completely enlightened, it's not being in survival mode, it's being able to shift between these very skillfully. And I think that may be one of the things that are lacking in a lot of these movements is, in Buddhism, it's called skillful means. So there's not a lot of planning. There's not a lot of deliberation. There's not a lot of clear intention. There's not a lot of clear leadership. You know, and that, you know, as much as I love Bernie, it wasn't a well planned out campaign, you know, whereas Hillary's, it was down to the detail. And so, which is wonderful. We need that passion. We need that heart, but we also need a clear vision and a clear intention behind everything we do. And for me in my own life, when I have both, we need both. When I don't have the heart and the passion, then it's just kind of this empty shell. But when I do have the structure and that clear vision, that clear intention, that's when the real magic happens. And that's when the real change happens. And that's really what we're up against is, you know, this kind of force, the opposite of that soul force, which is very skillful and very intentional, very deliberate and incredibly intelligent.
What do you think the opposite is? Like, what are you kind of talking about?
It's the shadow side of humanity, and we could probably call the shadow, it's almost this mechanistic predatory energy And it's not just humans. It's out there in the universe, and the universe is inherently a little bit chaotic and unstable and predatory. You know, that's just how evolution works. Life tends to feed on life. And we all have that within us, you know, and that's how competition and just all sorts of nasty things happen, is kind of this predatory shadow we all have.
I like that idea. I shouldn't say it's an idea. I like that, what you just said, the life feeds on life. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I've ever necessarily thought about it that way, but it's easy to think about because it makes perfect sense. You know, even if you break it down to thinking about, you know, the way the animal kingdom works, and all across the board, from the tiniest, smallest form of an animal all the way up to big predators and elephants and all that kind of stuff, they exist because of other animals and life and other energy. And so I'm sitting here now imagining that and thinking about that and the way that it kind of expands outwards into the entire universe. And that's a heavy thought, Aaron.
Right. I mean, even these wonderful life-giving suns, they create supernovas and just basically eat the entire solar system around them. Mm-hmm. It's the nature of universe is creation and destruction. In Indian Vedic terms, they say the universe is always being created and destroyed in every single moment, actually. You know, as soon as we inhale, we're creating, and we exhale, we're almost destroying, in a sense. I mean, everything we do, it's creating and destroying. And so that's not a bad thing. On the quantum level, that's also very true. It's our resistance to that nature of change. You know, people say, oh, we're in resistance to change, but we're also resistance to destruction. We're in resistance to like a forest fire, which also brings renewal. And so I feel like in some sense, a forest fire is happening in the collective consciousness. And it's not fun, but it's a purging. It's a purging. It's a waking up.
Yeah, I don't want to wait. Like, there's so much of me that in my own space where I'm tired of kind of feeling like we just have to wait and ride the wave of whatever the energy is doing right now. And do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and it's up to us to go first. And I think that's why shamans traditionally did these kind of death and rebirth ceremonies, embracing that nature of duality. Life and death, creation and destruction, because it's the ego death on some level. And you guys have a wonderful float pod experience here. But when you go into a float spot or even deep meditation, it's a kind of an ego death, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And essentially, this sense of self dies so that something much more expansive can be born into the world. And on a collective level, that's really what's happening, is it's the death of this small ego, small collective human idea of who we are, so that something much bigger can be born. At least that's what I believe.
Yeah.
And that's really the only way we're going to survive as a species, if we can die to kind of this adolescent stage, move into being grown-ups.
Do you think that, I don't remember what it was, but I was listening to this one thing. I think it was probably a podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts. But they were talking about this idea, this concept, or whether you want to call it a, you know, it's still up for debate in the realm of science and all the different things, but that the polar ice caps were struck by a meteor and kind of flash melted, in a sense, and flooded the planet. And they speculate that that's kind of what happened to Atlantis and some of those other ancient civilizations. And they also referenced and talked about this concept. And I had never thought about this before, but it makes perfect sense, because we think about ancient civilizations, right? If we look at whether it's the pyramids in Egypt or South America and all the Mayans and everything like that, we had these ancient civilizations that seemed very advanced in some way, shape, or form. But then at the same time, we still think of ourselves as this incredibly advanced form of humans, right? Where we're so much further technologically advanced. But the idea was, right now on this earth, on this planet, we have, you know, the vast majority of society is this highly advanced in regards to like technology and the ability for us to communicate and travel and all of these different things. Like, we can send a robot to Mars and all this kind of stuff that can take place right now. But we also have hunters and gatherers still that exist on this planet at the exact same time. And I never really thought about that. I mean, you think about it and, you know, obviously it crosses your mind, but the fact is that we can have two completely separate forms of man that are so vastly different taking place at the exact same time. It's really easy to imagine that 12,000 years ago, the exact same thing could have taken place, could have been happening where, you know, there were basic forms of man in the hunter-gatherer sense where they lived in huts and whatever the case may be. And then there was a vastly technologically advanced society that existed. Mm-hmm. And like the speculation too was, you know, if we were to have something similar happen today where, you know, mass amounts of the population of the planet was wiped out for whatever reason it may be, most likely the people that remained were going to be the people who are already living that life of survival, those people that are already in that state of like, that's just their normal everyday life where they have to survive, right? Where a lot of society isn't like that, where suddenly they're thrown into that space where we no longer have the ability to go down to the store and get, you know, a gallon of milk. And so it got me thinking, it got me like the wheels turning in my head and thinking about, I think it's very plausible in my mind to think that, you know, 12,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, we could have been super much further technologically advanced than we are right now. And there could have still have been just some hunters and gatherers that, you know, existed. And then society's wiped out and we have to start rebuilding. And my mind just went crazy. What do you think, though?
Yes, I think you're very right. And I think there's actually no coincidence that a lot of people who are connected to kind of this next level of consciousness, mm-hmm. In whatever way, there's a draw back to the earth. There's a draw to be sustainable. A lot of the spiritual communities I work with, they're all moving towards solar power, sustainable ecology, organic farming, things like that, because we're not sustainable. You know, we've been trying to force the earth to adapt to us, and sooner or later the earth is going to make us adapt back to it. And that's just the cycle of change, you know, creation and destruction. And so to be on that edge of evolution, we also have to get back to our roots of survival. So we can't just be all up here in the crown chakra and the heart chakra. We have to be on all the levels, and we have to get back to our roots, to being grounded. And especially as spiritual practitioners, that's what's really all about. And that's why we do start working with the body in our academy, training the body and training the mind, because that's the root, that's the foundation, that's the vehicle we have while we're in this planet. And it's not to be stuck in any one level, because it's never going to be perfect, but to be able to shift as things shift. And that's what works for me. And you can even be at, you know, a wonderful spiritual retreat center. When I lived at the Tibetan Buddhist retreat center, you know, I had this wonderful cabin in the mountains looking over the valley, and, you know, I was a little bit disconnected from the world, obviously, and it was wonderful. I didn't want to come back. I didn't know why I was supposed to come back. Now I know why I'm supposed to come back, but who wants to come back from that? And so I would meditate at night looking out over the wonderful stars with no artificial light around, just feeling very spiritual and maybe a little bit superior. I'm sure all that comes up, but I was just minding my own business, practicing. And it was very easy for people to get ungrounded up there, and kind of get swept away in these really powerful energies. But you had to stay grounded, because there's things like bears and mountain lions and wonderful things like that that could eat you. You know, it was very hard to be grounded. And I was doing this practice called Chud, which is really kind of this meditation on death and rebirth. You're literally dying and being reborn in your mind. And they tell you to be careful when you practice Chud, because animals will be drawn to you.
What is it called?
Chud.
Chud?
Yeah, C-H-O-D. It's a kind of yogic meditation on death and rebirth. And, you know, I just finished the practice and looking up at the stars and just feeling one with everything and very blissed out. And then I felt like this thud on the porch behind me. And I thought I was safe because the porch was about 15 feet off the ground. And I just kind of ignored it. I was like, oh, I'm blissed out, one with everything, everything's fine. And then I felt and heard the boards creak behind me. And I knew I wasn't actually heavy enough to creak the board, so it had to be something fairly big behind me. And it was so dark out, I couldn't see. I just kind of glanced around. I couldn't see anything, but I could feel something behind me. And it was just this really kind of dark, predatory force behind me, like something wanted to eat me.
Yeah.
And so it was literally a manifestation of this thing we're talking about. But, you know, in my cognitive mind, I'm just like, oh, it's fine. Everything will be fine. I'm just not even worry about it. But for on some level, I must have thought like nothing was fine because I had been practicing also with like this kind of little samurai sword next to me just to keep me safe from the bears. I didn't expect something could jump up on them. And it got closer and I could hear the boards creaking again. And my mind is still thinking, nope, it's fine, everything's fine, one with everything. And then it got really close and I could actually feel its breath on the back of my neck. And you can just smell kind of like this meaty carnivorous smell in its breath. And it was pretty clear at that point that something really big and really wanted to eat me behind me. But I'm still in denial. And I thought, well, maybe I should, you know, swing around with my samurai sword. But then I thought, people would think I'm ridiculous. Why am I meditating with a samurai sword and swinging around when there's nothing back there? And so, and then I realized, you know, I've really got to shift my awareness and get really grounded. And, but there's this back and forth. We always have this internal dialogue. And so I decided to ignore it. And then I felt this giant whap on the back of my head. And it just hurt so hard. It was like this brick hitting me on the head. And I thought, something must have fallen off the roof and hit me in the head. What is that? Still in denial. We're still in denial. This thing right behind us. And then finally, I like, I've got to shift. And so I took the sword and swung behind me. And there was nothing there. It just like kind of vanished so fast. And I didn't, I'm like, did I just make that up? But my head was just burning. And I went inside and I could see like little scratch marks. And so it's probably just testing me to see if I was food or not. Mm-hmm. And then the next day we saw a giant mountain lion walking around. And so that was a pretty good example of, you know, being stuck in a spiritual state and not being able to shift and needing something kind of dangerous almost and dark to slap me and wake me up. And I was really woken up after that, you know.
That's so trippy. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, to have that experience, it's a cool experience first off, and, you know, gladly nothing too bad happened.
Yeah.
But then, like you kept saying over and over again, like you're kind of in denial, like you're in that state where you're like, it's okay, I can stay in this happy, meditative, blissful place.
Right.
And whether or not it's really something that's there, or because I've been in meditation before, I've had experiences before where you feel very dark energy, you feel
right.
very dark presence of things that kind of start to take shape around you and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's funny, you know, I could totally see me being in that similar experience where you're like, that's just...
It's my mind.
Yeah, it's just something, right,
right,
that's there, and I'm able to push through it and stay in that space and some sort of like challenge of me spiritually and to be able to move through.
Yeah.
And then the mountain lion's like, no, dumbass, it's me. I'm going to smack you in the head.
And then you get eaten. And there's no stories written about how spiritual you were.
That's too
just
funny.
Some dumbass sitting out at night on the porch getting eaten by a mountain lion. So that could have been that story too. But I feel like on some level, first of all, that woke me up. That was when I realized like it was time to come back into the world and do something. And I think the world itself is waking up. And a lot of people have been in denial and they're still in denial. And so we had to kind of get slapped and we're going to have to keep getting slapped. And some people are maybe going to get eaten by the mountain lion until we wake up. But that's what has to happen. And it's about waking up because... You know, it's very rare that there is actually a mountain lion behind you. You know, in yogic and Buddhist traditions, there's really nothing outside of you. There's no evil demons or spirits. They're all within you. You know, it's just when we do meditate, these unconscious things come up, these shadows, and that's when it's time to wake up and face them. So yoga, the practice, is to bring, you know, kind of this unconscious darkness into the light. And so at least with Trump, that's happening. All these things were there. All these racist, sexist, horrible things were there. You know, and women, minorities, they were feeling violated every day. And so much suffering. And now it's getting worse in some sense, you know, because people are emboldened to violate people and abuse them and you know, make them feel threatened. But at least it's in the light now.
Do you think that kind of on the, like, the bigger, huger, that's not a word, but the deeper spiritual aspect of life and society, because all of those things that he kind of brought forth and represented and talked about freely, and the things that took place over the campaign and everything like that we would see, you know, come up every other day or something like that. That's really the dark stuff of society. Like, absolutely. That's the stuff that people hide. That's the stuff that people don't want to talk about. They don't want to admit it. They don't want to be judged or viewed because they may, you know, lean that way, or they may have that thought or that perspective. But I think as a whole, I think that people typically aren't like that anymore. Do you know what I mean? I think that for the most part, people aren't racist, aren't sexist, aren't, you know, these not horrible. I shouldn't judge people and say that they're horrible, but I don't think that the vast majority of society is like that. Mm-hmm. But we still have that aspect of us inside where we have to, like you said, bring it out and bring it into the light.
We all do. And, you know, people who are stuck in those lower chakras of fear and survival, they're like that. And we would be like that too if we didn't have, you know, a certain amount of education and wisdom and compassion. If we were in survival mode and we felt like it was them or us, we would do the same thing, especially if we didn't have the knowledge and wisdom that we do have. And so I would agree most of the people I know aren't like that. But most of the world is in survival mode. And so it's both. Most people, I'd say, you know, even like a racist person, at heart, they're very loving and they want to take care of their family and their friends. But there's also the dual side. And so it's always both. It's always both. It's and so last time we talked a little bit about, are people naturally compassionate and kind? And I would say yes and no, because, you know, little kids are very selfish. And sometimes they'll do really nasty things to each other. But at the same time, they're also very compassionate and loving. And so it's always both.
That duality.
It's frustrating.
It is frustrating.
Why can't we just be perfect and awesome to everybody?
Yeah, it is frustrating when you get stuck in it sometimes.
Yeah.
I have this other thing that came up with, I don't remember who it was that was on the podcast. And it was the conversation that we had after we got done recording and we were talking. And this whole idea, I had never even thought of this either, so I kind of want to get your take on it and see what you think. But people talk about like feminine and masculine energy and how, you know, not just us as individuals have it within us, and the earth as a whole and the planet and the universe and everything like that kind of has that split of feminine and masculine energy. And what they were talking about was the idea was that it seems like, and it may be very much just that it seems like, but it kind of seems like more and more and more people are not just being born, but feeling comfortable and coming out in their sexuality and identifying as whether they're homosexual or lesbian or gay or whatever. And their argument, I suppose, was that the reason that's happening on a more broader basis and on a more regular basis was is the planet's kind of way of bringing more balance, because a lot of times those people tend to be more balanced in their energy with the equal parts of masculine and feminine, as opposed to being, do you know what I mean, so heavily masculine or so heavily feminine or whatever the case may be. But it was an interesting concept. I'd never thought about it that way, where it's kind of like the universe's way of bringing more balance into the space, of having more people that are centered in their masculine and feminine energy. It's a weird topic because it's like, it's silly to label people, right? Like, just because somebody may be gay doesn't mean that they are feminine, but it's kind of stereotypical in some way, but the concept in the deeper level was kind of interesting to me. Had you ever thought about it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on the deepest level, yeah, of course, we're all connected. I would never say we're all one, but we're all connected. But in the material world, we do live in a world of shadow and light, of duality, of these kind of masculine and feminine energies, and we have them both in us. And because we're in a, you know, you and I are in a masculine form, we tend to run more masculine energy, and our thoughts tend to be more masculine. It doesn't mean someone can't be more feminine or masculine. And so from a yogic perspective, masculine and feminine energy might be called like yin and yang, or, you know, the god and the goddess, things like that. Shakti or Shiva. Those are terms for two sides of the same coin, you know, the polarities. So everything has a polarity. And so we need to learn how to work with those energies in a really skillful way, and being able to shift between them, even between your sexual identity, I think, and ultimately really not identify as male or female. I think in a sense that is the path forward. It was really interesting when I just first started taking psych classes in college, there was this little phrase, this little sentence that said, the optimal state psychologically is androgynous. And that's all it said. I'm like, wait, tell me more. What does that mean? Just like kind of this subversive line in the psychology text. And no one thought about that. But it doesn't mean I'm gay or I'm attracted to men. It just means that I try to embrace all of these different aspects of who I am. You know, and I feel like I'm a lot more skillful when I can do that, and I'm a lot happier. You know, and, you know, maybe as I get older, I can't do some of the same things I used to be, and I'm not as masculine. I say I'm half the man I used to be, but I'm twice the woman. It's really empowering because women have so much more power than men, and they're a lot more tapped into this creative life force. And in Tibetan Buddhism and yoga, we actually do these meditations, these elaborate meditations, where we activate these internal goddess archetypes inside of us. And it's so powerful and so liberating because especially monks who don't have exposure to that kind of creative feminine energy, they're able to access them, this inside of themselves, and start to be integrated and use these energies to become more enlightened and help other people. Otherwise, you're just kind of stuck in this one kind of paradigm, this limited dynamic of this is how yoga should be. And it's a very masculine paradigm. Mm-hmm. And most yoga is very masculine. It's very structured. But then you do have wonderful women yogi practitioners who bring in these healing practices, like that should practice. It's from a wonderful woman yogi called Machin Lobdrin. And it's a healing practice, and it's a way to not just resist and control and conform the energies, but to embrace them and nurture them. And, you know, not disown these dark aspects, but feed them. And so there's that Native American saying, I'm sure you've heard, there's two wolves inside of me and they're both fighting. You know, one's the wolf of anger and fear, and one's the wolf of love. And the boy says, you know, which one wins? And the elder says, the one you feed, which is lovely. But what's going to happen to that wolf that you never feed? It's just going to get more pissed off and more angry, more disowned.
Yeah.
And so I would say just feed them both and love them both.
Feed them both.
And, yeah. And that's what Martin Luther King said, is he said, you know, hate is too much of a burden to bear, and love is the only thing that transforms. You know, it's the only thing that transforms an enemy into a friend. It doesn't mean that we can, you know, give in to these kind of dark forces, because that would just be like cooperating with them. So peaceful resistance is incredibly important, which is why things like what's going on at Standing Rock right now with the Native Americans and the pipeline is probably way more important than like a Donald Trump getting elected. Mm-hmm. Because it's people standing up from a heart space and saying, you know, I'm just saying no, you know, I'm not going to play your game. I'm not going to fight you, but I'm going to say no. And I know that this power of love and truth, the soul force, which Gandhi and Martin Luther King talked about, is so much more powerful. And you can beat me, you can fight me, you can even kill me, but we'll still love you and we'll change you in the process.
I don't know if we do change them.
Well, and that's the big question. Does it actually change things? I don't think it changes those people who are like spraying them and firing bullets in the crowd and things like that. But maybe some of them. And it changes the perception. It changes the collective consciousness just enough.
See, it's hard because it's, you know, follow some of that Standing Rock stuff. And you see, I mean, it's hard not to see it pop up and, you know, look into it. And I've gone through and I've watched a lot of the videos that are being recorded there and everything like that. And it's really interesting for me in the perspective that I kind of have and the take on it. Because I used to be a cop. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, I used to be a cop. And so I have it, you know, I can see myself in the sense of having to go and do something that you don't want to do or that you feel very strongly opposed to. But at the same time, it's your job.
Right.
It's your responsibility. Right. And, you know, it's so easy to look at it from this, not necessarily the skewed perspective, but the perspective of the people that are there peacefully protesting, the people that are there holding space, and this law enforcement and these police officers and whatever, you know, the security is a little bit different, but because they have like private security forces or whatever there for the oil companies. But I'm sitting there watching these things and I'm looking at it, and then I read all the comments and hear everybody's feedback, and it's like that officer has a responsibility and a duty to their job, and not just their job, but at the time laws that are in place. So as a police officer, you agree to uphold, you know, not just the Constitution of the United States, but the state constitution wherever you live, and uphold the laws that are in place, regardless of whether or not you agree with those laws. You have that responsibility as a police officer. And so in a sense, those people are violating laws that may exist that are in place, right, wrong, or indifferent mm-hmm. for those laws. It's just, that's just a crappy situation to be in.
Right, right. And I don't know what the answer is. I think when laws are unjust, you do need to stand up to them. And I don't think violence is the answer, because you can't win. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as things get violent there, those people are not going to win.
No.
No. And they'll justify as like, well, things got violent. They tried to justify that last night by being like, oh, people were starting fires. Like, no, that's actually didn't happen. And fortunately, there's drones and video footage to show it was just outright aggression on the part of the security forces. But regardless, I think what we're doing is we're figuring out as we go what works. And on some level, these ideas of Gandhi and Martin Luther King, they did work. And so they kind of laid the groundwork. But we need to take that even further and be much more advanced and sophisticated and use all the tools and wisdom that we have to create positive change, and do it in a very skillful way, an intentional way.
See, I totally agree. Like, and I've had this conversation before too in regards to like energy work and, you know, the teachings and practices of shamans and all these different things that have taken place over thousands of years that we are still incorporating and using in our own spiritual practices and ceremonies and meditations and all this kind of different stuff. It's wonderful and it's really good energy and it's good stuff. But the world is so vastly different today than it was 1,000 years
Absolutely.
Ago. And so we have to take it and then expand upon it, not just stay in that space. And so it's the same thing. Like you said, Gandhi and Martin Luther had wonderful messages that they mm-hmm. put forth, and the peaceful way to move towards love is really, really good. But at the same time, we have to do more than that. We have to take that energy, that information, and kind of use it for what we have today, because mm-hmm. the world's just a completely different place, even than, you know, in the time of Martin Luther King or Gandhi.
Right. Yeah, and do it in a much more enlightened way. And this is the ultimate discipline, I guess, is to start to practice to move beyond this ego. move beyond duality and seeing the big picture. And it's only when we can do that, in my opinion at least, that we can see, like, what is the most skillful way, what is the most skillful thing I can do in this situation. So maybe it's not marching and protesting, you know, maybe it's like doing something on social media, you know, becoming an expert in that. Maybe it's, in my case, training teachers who will go out and, you know, change the world. Maybe it's becoming a cop, you know, and changing things from the inside, or becoming a politician, changing things from the inside. And that did kind of happen in the 70s, where people realized, you know, this love and light stuff, it just doesn't work. And so people started going into politics and things like that. But over time, power corrupts, you know. That's where the Clintons came from. I think they had good intentions, and then just over time, slowly gets corrupted a little bit.
It got corrupted a lot. It wasn't corrupted a little bit.
But even now, I think people like that, they have good intentions. They believe they have good intentions, and they believe their heart's in the right place. You know, even Donald Trump believes that. Mm-hmm. But that's why these yogic practices of soul force, it requires discipline, commitment, and a lot of wisdom and skillful means that most of humanity just isn't at right now. And I myself, you know, it's hard for me to practice every day and meditate. But the days I do, it's a lot better, and life is just way easier. And I'm a lot more skillful, and things actually get done. And I feel like that's where the universe is guiding us, is to wake up to all of our skills and all of our gifts.
I have a question for you, and whether or not you want to answer it or not, it's totally up to you. But what is, like, the most difficult thing that you've ever had to move through in life? The thing that kind of pushed you to the point of all the different, do you know what I mean? Like, the deepest challenge that you've ever had to experience within your own space.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think most people would be like, oh yes, that time I, you know, had addiction to something. But I'd say it's relationships for me. And everything could be an addiction in a sense. And all these relationships people have, either with drugs or with unhealthy partnerships or things like that, it's a distraction in a sense. It's a way for us not to have to deal with our stuff. Even kind of like an obsession with politics or what's going on in the world, that's just another way to not have to deal with our stuff. So I can't think of anything specific, but that's been the biggest thing for me, is like peeling back the layers and seeing, like, okay, am I moving forward and evolving, or am I just distracting myself? And that can be really painful, because underneath that, there's some deep wounds and some pretty dark places that you've just never realized until they come up.
And then what do you do with them when they come up? Like, what is, you know, like, what is your, because I'm trying to think of, I know what I do, and, but I like the idea that we get to give somebody out there some idea that, do you know what I mean? Because it does happen, you know, like you said, dark stuff will come up, and you either face it or you choose to continue to kind of turn a blind eye and not look at it. And then it's that wolf that you're not, you may not be feeding,
you're not feeding the wolf.
Yeah. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, what do you do, Craig? I don't know. maybe you can give me some ideas.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, in order to kind of face your shadow, I think it takes practice. I think it takes time. And I think you have to have help. I think that's a huge thing, where a lot of times you may be able to see aspects of it and understand it, but in discussing it and working with somebody else, and, you know, even if it's just through the relationship that you have, whether it's your girlfriend or your spouse or whatever the case may be, but getting somebody else's perspective and take on it, so that it can help you see it even more from different angles and perspectives. And then in the end, like, for me, I have to sit in it. Like, that's me. Like, I have to just stay in that shitty space and be okay with that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a few days, and sometimes it's a few weeks of being in that kind of crappy, funky space. But it's almost like I give it enough time to absorb what I need to absorb from it, and then it's easier to move out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right on there, is kind of creating this relationship with it. And this is something we might play with right now, is learning how to identify and talk to our shadows, and from there transforming it. And it's really simple, because we go through life and we identify with these different aspects, like I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a cop, I'm a spiritual yogi. And our mind, even our nervous system, our body, it believes it completely, right? So there's a little magical word in there of like, I am this. You know, when Moses talked to the burning bush and asked God what he was, it just said, I am. And so that's one place to start, is starting to identify with, one, what we're resisting, and then what would we like to transform that into. And so, you know, maybe there's some aspect for you or everybody out there that's blocking you. I'd say for most of us, it might be called the ego. In voice dialogue, we call it the controller. And we all have this in us. So if you want, close your eyes just for a second. And everybody out there can join us. And take a deep breath and breathe all the way to your abdomen. And just know whatever you say is going to be correct for you. And it's going to work. It's going to work for every one of you, because it works every time. And we're all connected. This is all an aspect of us. It's easy, because all we have to do is say, I am the controller. I am the controller. So when you're ready out there, just say, I am the controller. I am the controller. And say it out loud. So I am the controller.
I am the controller.
I am the controller. And feel this energy of the controller coming into you. Say it one more time. I am the controller.
I am the controller.
Good. And so as the controller, what do you do? What is your job?
To control.
To control. Yeah, it's pretty simple. And anyone listening can answer out loud. It might be something different. But it's easier when you answer out loud and you talk about in yourself in the third person. So as Aaron's controller, I like to control certain things. So as Craig's controller, as the controller, what do you like to control?
Everything.
Everything, yeah. Pretty straightforward. It's pretty simple. And what happens as the controller when things feel like they're out of control?
Frustration and anger. Pain. Mm-hmm. Fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what happens when other people try to control Craig? Or control whoever's listening?
Resistance. A lot of resistance.
Lots of resistance. What does that feel like in your body?
Tension. Like physical tension inside mm-hmm. my body and my muscles and mm-hmm. things like that. Also, like a need to move, like an anxious kind of, like, you know, I need to get out of this space that I'm in.
Absolutely. Yeah, it feels suffocating. And what would you, what kinds of things might you do to escape from that feeling?
Any number of things to kind of distract myself from that feeling, or physically force myself into some other space, whether it's, you know, literally just doing something completely different, or finding something actually that I can bring control to.
Right. And that's such a basic need to control things, because what happens throughout life if we don't have that control? What might have happened if you didn't have control in your life, if you let other people control you?
Then you get hurt.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pain.
Because they just do whatever they want.
Well, they're just controlling their life and their experiences.
Right. Yeah. But from our perspective as the controller, it's not awesome. So I would say to you and to everybody listening, as the controller, you provide a very valuable service. And you've done a great job. So good job. So what kinds of negative things might happen as the controller when you try to control too much?
You're going to get feedback. Like if you think about if you try to over control things and people and situations and experiences, you're going to get their resistance and their negative feedback from that experience of trying to be controlled.
Right. And how do they feel about you?
Not very happy.
They don't like you anymore. They don't want to play with you.
Yeah.
No, absolutely right. So what if all of our controllers just got along? How would that be?
That would be very interesting.
Would be. And is it okay as the controller on some level if other people try to control things and control their lives, mm-hmm. even if it conflicts with you?
Very much so.
Yeah. All right. So wonderful. I think this is the essential aspect that keeps us blocked on some level. Some people might call it the ego, but I think it's wonderful. There's nothing wrong with the ego. And so let's do this. Let's not get rid of it. Let's feed it. Let's embrace it. And so if you're ready, join with me. Would you like to evolve as the controller and become more embraced?
Very much so.
Okay. Because what is it like as the controller when you're just pushed away and people say you're bad? Oh, so controlling.
Yeah, it's sad. It's a lonely place.
It's a very lonely place. And that just, and when people push us away and say something we're doing is wrong, what happens to us? What does that make us do and feel?
Almost withdraw more.
Yeah, it just makes us worse. And like little kids, we just kind of want to lash out,
mm-hmm.
control things more. But I say we need to love that more. So let's do this as the controller. Just breathe this energy in. Breathe this in from head to toe. And when you're ready, make a shift and say, I'm the controller, completely embraced. Completely embraced. Say out loud, I'm the controller, completely embraced.
I am the controller, completely embraced.
Good. And just feel that energy, that awareness, being embraced with every cell. And I am the controller, completely loved. Completely loved.
I am the controller, completely loved.
Notice how that love feels different. Breathe that all the way to the center of your chest. Every aspect that someone might have said was wrong or you thought was wrong, just love it. And I am the controller, completely free, completely free.
I am the controller, completely free.
It's nice. And feel more free with each breath. And what is it like now as the control evolved? How does that feel different? Is it still there?
It does feel different.
It's there, but it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And from this perspective of being embraced, how might you interact differently with the world if this aspect of you was more embraced?
I think you would embrace more.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe other people would embrace you more too.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
That's good stuff.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks for playing. And so that's the first level of working with the ego. And then that expands your sense of self because we're kind of trapped in this need to control.
Yeah.
But the controller will let you play with any aspect from there. You can move into these enlightened states. You can move into the root chakra states. You can even move your consciousness to experience other people.
That would be cool. I think we do. I think even subconsciously
we all do. Yeah. And we do this all day long. We talk to ourselves. We say, I am this. I am that. It's just we haven't done it skillfully.
Yeah.
And so it's just one little tool.
We went and saw, we're going to change tracks a little bit.
Yeah.
But we went and saw The Arrival yesterday. Have you seen previews for that one?
No, I want to see it. So tell my partner it's awesome. Was it awesome?
It was good.
Okay.
It was good. It's one of those that it was done well. It's not your typical kind of alien movie and whatnot.
Yeah. Don't say aliens.
Yeah.
Say advanced beings. That's what I tell her.
Advanced beings. But it was good. I won't ruin it for you. But I would definitely go see it. I would recommend it. It was a good one. And then we saw Doctor Strange earlier, too.
I love Doctor Strange.
Did you like it?
And she loved it, too. And now she makes references to Doctor Strange all the time. She's a little strange, but awesome. And I love it. Because that's kind of like this yogic superhero, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in comic books, he trained with these Buddhist yogis and learned all these advanced techniques. And the theme of the movie was, and she asked him, how'd you get to be a surgeon? And he said, practice and discipline. And so that was the theme of the movie. It was just like, oh, I was given some random powers. It's like, I had to practice and discipline myself and ultimately give up my ego, give up my sense of self and sacrifice myself again and again and again and die again and again and again. And that's what he did. And then he became liberated in something more. So that's profound.
It is profound. And that movie, I mean, you know, it was fun and they did it really well and stuff like that. I had a conversation with one of my buddies who he's like, I didn't really care for it. It wasn't that good. And he's kind of, you know, typically a big fan of Marvel movies and comic book movies and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, you know, he thought that it was a little too out there. How is that a little too out there where you look at, you know, like the Avengers yes. and some ginormous, you know, Hulk running around? I mean, that's a little too out there, like just because they're talking about, you know, energy and chakras right. and he's doing different stuff. That's a little too bizarre.
No, I love it. And it's great because there is a reality basis to all that. Yeah, it's a little bit out there, but these kind of cities, these powers on some level, they're very real. Not like Doctor Strange, but you definitely do things you can't explain after a while.
What have you experienced? Like, have you ever experienced something that you couldn't explain necessarily?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And it tends to happen more in groups, because I think especially groups of practitioners, because the collective becomes more and more powerful. And but we also see this on the dark side, that the collective is very powerful, you know, mass fascism, you know, Nazism, things like that. That was the power of the collective. So when we can tap into that in a skillful, you know, loving way, I think that's much more powerful. But right now, kind of that, if you want to say the adversary, if you will, it's a lot more skillful than most spiritual practitioners. And it's a lot smarter and it's pretty ruthless. But that's what we're up against. And I think people are being called to kind of be those spiritual warriors, for lack of a better word, or Jedi healers. You know, doesn't have to be fighting involved, but definitely healing is needed. And to become that kind of level of a healer, even like a surgeon, that takes a lot of practice and discipline. But it's exciting. It's worth it, because that's how it's really not about the results. You know, we're not attached to any kind of powers or cities or results, or even an identity as like a yogi or healer, but it's about how it transforms us. And we shouldn't be attached to any of those results. It's the path, and it's an endless path, fortunately.
Do you ever think we make it too hard sometimes? Like, not necessarily make it too hard, but do you ever think that it's way less kind of fantastic and complicated? Like, we like to think about the universe and the energy and all of these different intertwining pieces of sacred geometry that takes place out there in the cosmos. And I mean, it's incredibly overwhelming mm-hmm. when you look at it in the big grand scheme of things. But what if it's like, what if it is just pure chaos
yeah.
and happenstance? And yeah, so absolutely. Everything else that we've made up around it in regards to try to explain away and justify away the experiences that happen, really, it's at the core of it's just chaos.
Yeah, and I would say quantum physics is understanding that. We just people always say, well, you know, what are the odds of this one universe and that me being this one person in this universe happening without some kind of, you know, master plan? But physics would say there's infinite universes who are way more chaotic and way more troubled than ours. And we just have to be this one small little blue planet that has just enough stability, enough order to create life. And so in a sense, we kind of won the cosmic lottery. You know, it'd be like somebody winning a lottery and saying like, see, there's order to the universe because I won the lottery, rather than mm-hmm. being like looking around all these other people in the world who did not win the lottery. And I'd say that's the reality, is that we kind of do live in this world of suffering or samsara and chaos. And that's what the Buddha said, is that life is suffering, But the good news is that there's a way to alleviate suffering. And a lot of that has to do with understanding, like, yes, the nature of the universe is chaotic and suffering, but let's not get depressed about that. Let's go out and do some good and make a dent on the universe and kind of be this this group of beings who want to bring more order and love and harmony into the world. And that's a crazy calling. It's a crazy calling. because it's almost impossible. Yeah. But even if at the end of life, nothing much happened, at least we tried.
Yeah.
And we can look back and say, at least we tried. And sometimes we manage to do the impossible and we succeed. And that's worth it.
I totally agree, Aaron. Give everybody, like, if somebody wants to contact you, somebody wants to find you, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can go to shiftcourses.com. Be careful how you spell the shift. Shiftcourses.com. And you can get a little free ebook on Soul Force and my philosophy on yoga. And if you are interested in yoga teacher training, we'll have a link there as well. Or you can just go to embodyacademy.com and, you know, start your Jedi training.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you coming back out for the podcast.
Thanks, Greg. Love you, man.
Everybody go have a beautiful, wonderful day.
We're all connected. Women have so much more power than men, and they're a lot more tapped into this creative life force. Why can't we just be perfect and awesome to everybody? Life tends to feed on life. Essentially, this sense of self dies so that something much more expansive can be born into the world.